and welcome to the Heal Your Heart, Heal Your Life podcast.
A podcast where we talk all things trauma, life lessons and healing journeys to hopefully inspire others going through tough times and let them know that they are not alone, that we see, hear and love them. This podcast is about the journey from cultural conditioning to healing, self-love and acceptance via storytelling and sharing of pieces of our heart. I really believe in and feel like the way forward is empowering women's voices to be seen and heard and valued for what they have to share. And a lot of this podcast is me running into really inspiring people in the midst of my self-development journey and deciding I need to have you on because your voice, your message needs to be heard by more than just me in this conversation. We learn so much from hearing other people's experience and how they've navigated a situation. And I know for me, when I was going through my darkest hours, it was like, other people have done this too. How can I find a way through the darkness? So that's what Heal Your Heart, Heal Your Life's here to do, really. It's to help you on your healing journey, listening to people who maybe are on the other side now, to remind you that it's possible that anyone can do the inner work and do the healing and to find a way through the darkness and back into the light and then use it to help and heal others as well. So sit back, relax, and enjoy stories of growth from inspiring people who are doing the inner work. I'm Kiara Jade. I'm an author, speaker, and healer in all things, relationships, and self-worth. It's an honor to have you listening to us today. So today's episode I'm really excited about will be with Ren Alessandra, who is an Italo-Australian national award-winning, highly commissioned poet and educator based in Naarm, Melbourne. Since 2020, she has mothered Wordcraft, a collective centered in celebrating our stories, raw and in process. Here, Ren and her crew host open mics, poetry slams, writing courses, and more in school and council programs for teens and adults. She's been commissioned by organizations locally and internationally, including Rotary International, Federation Square, City of Yarra, Sustainability Victoria, and City of Melbourne for the Summer Nights Drone Show on New Year's Eve 2022. She has performed at the Melbourne Recital Centre with Live Nation as the storyteller for the Premier's Multicultural Dinner and was a judge for the Victorian Premier's Literary Award in 2022, among others. She recently has been commissioned by the State Library for her debut show, War Girl, and was one of the first poets translated into Braille in the recent fellowship initiative, Invisible Libraries, the first ever Braille collection of poetry that the library has ever seen. Her poetry explores femininity, heritage, and love in all its colours. And I'm lucky to say that Ren Alessandra is also one of my dear friends who inspires me. And I'm very grateful to have her on the show today.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming.
Absolutely. I'm excited.
So I'd love to know, how'd you get started with poetry? Like, that was a huge laundry list of all the amazing things you've done. Like, where does one start with poetry?
I say this regularly at this point, that it really surprises people to know that I hated poetry growing up.
That is a shock.
Yeah. I hated it. You know, if you people come to Wordcraft or see me on stage or hear me perform, when I tell them that the origin is the exact opposite, that I despise the art form, that I found it to be too fancy, too boring, too sophisticated, that I needed to have a certain level of language to be deemed good at it, and that I just avoided it at all costs. Yeah, it stuns people because I guess when you dedicate your life to something and you commit to it and you state it as your vocation, it's kind of implied that you've been doing it forever.
Yeah.
But for me, I avoided it. I did my arts degree at uni and avoided studying poetry at all costs. Every time it popped up on the syllabus or I had an opportunity to choose it, I would avoid it and think, haha, I got away with it again. Like, screw you, not doing it. And I really do put that down to now that I'm an English teacher and I'm in the classroom and I'm seeing how poetry is delivered, I do put it down to the way that it was delivered to me in my education. And when I go to schools and I ask, whenever I started a school, when I go into schools to teach poetry, introduce slam poetry to students, the first question I ask them is, who here hates poetry? That's always my first question. And without a doubt, between half to three quarters of them will put their hand up. And I know that that's going to be their answer because that's how I felt in school too. And to think that 15 years later, 20 years later, you know, 25 years later, that the way that poetry is delivered still hasn't changed collectively when there is such a reemergence, such a renaissance in the art form. It's pretty, pretty astounding. And so, yeah, that was how it began for me. And then, yeah, moving through high school, moving through my studies and my practice as a writer, I became dangerously obsessed, and not in like a hashtag obsessed, you know, look at my shopping reveal, but genuinely obsessed with my novel, my first ever novel. And I labored over it for a really long time, for almost 5 years. And I damaged myself. I really burnt a hole in my relationship with my art, in my heart, trying to pursue this idea of what it meant to be a successful writer, what it meant to be a successful creative. That meant that I had to pursue something in the traditional sense, quote unquote. And so I labored over this writing for such a long time, to the point that it damaged my friendships, frightened my family. I tell people regularly, you know, that, have you seen The Queen's Gambit?
Yes.
Have I told you this before?
No.
So in The Queen's Gambit, there's this motif, this repeated scene where she's lying in bed, and at night when she's staring up at the ceiling, she can't bring herself to sleep because she's so obsessed with chess that the board and the pieces all appear on the ceiling and she moves the pieces around in her mind and plays chess before she goes to sleep. And I remember the first time I ever saw that, it struck me that, wow, she's obsessed with chess because that's what I used to do. I was obsessed with my novel, and I used to imagine my manuscript on the ceiling and myself editing it and writing it while I was trying to rest. So I was always working on this thing. I invested tens of thousands of dollars into learning and courses and writing and conferences and books and you name it. And I was throwing everything I had at writing the perfect novel. It had to be flawless. It had to be a certain way. And then I realized that it had really pummeled me inward, and I was really quite fractured internally. And it was definitely a manifestation of a lot of self-worth, low self-worth, deep social anxiety. And I had just poured everything I had into this art in the hope that it would fix it. And I was in a really not very well place in 2018, 2019.
Yeah.
And when I was honestly probably at my darkest, poetry found me. And I know, like, whenever I say that, it feels really cliche, but I guess cliches come from truth, right? So I really resonate with that feeling, though. Like, I think back to the moment where I was standing in the shower, and standing in the bathroom rather after a shower, and I was singing a song, and the song ended, and I kept singing, and I was like making up lyrics. I was like, the lyrics are better than the actual, my lyrics are better than the real ones. And then I kept talking and I kept talking, and then I sort of like made a face of myself in the mirror, and I was like, I just spoke a poem. That's weird. Like, what am I doing speaking poetry? Why am I doing that? I don't like poetry. I hate poetry. I have crafted an identity within myself and the people who love me as someone who hates poetry. And really, hated it. And so I ignored it. But then I did it again and again and again. And then suddenly I had three or four poems rolling around in my head that I loved. And I found that the more that I recited them, mind you, the first few that I wrote, I didn't actually write them. I just spoke them to myself over and over again, like getting to know a song. And yeah, by the time I had three or four, I realized that they were becoming my mantras and that I was repeating them to myself in private all the time while I was driving, when I was anxious, when I felt scared, when I felt tight in the mind, when I felt like I was speaking to myself negatively, when I was, you know, demonizing and being horrible to my body and speaking horribly to my body. And I found that these words, they kept resurfacing and reemerging from my heart, from my throat, as if they were waiting for me. And then at the time when that was happening and I was becoming more aware of the fact that, wow, this art form is actually helping me. It's actually shifting something in me. It actually makes me emotional just thinking about that. I realized that, wow, spoken word poetry, okay, that's a thing. And I'd heard about it and I'd seen it mocked online and stuff and in cinema, but I'd never really pursued it or engaged with it. And then I realized that there was an entire community in Melbourne that hosted events every night of the week at this point before COVID, and that I could go and that they were open to me. And so I knew about it and I didn't go to an event for 9 months.
Wow.
Yeah.
After that realization.
So I kept to myself for 9 months. I kept writing, but I didn't tell anybody that I was doing it. I kept it incredibly private, which, if you know me, I don't keep many things private. I'm an incredibly open, somewhat boundaryless person when it comes to sharing.
Yeah.
But this part of me, I just couldn't. I couldn't bear to be seen as someone doing something that I thought I hated.
Yeah.
Because I was scared of being seen as lame, because poetry's lame, isn't it? Poetry's boring. Poetry's too sophisticated. It's confusing. It's old. So I thought that that meant that if I liked it, then that would make me less than too.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So I really internalized a lot of these beliefs that I'd inherited about poetry. And then because I identified so deeply with my writing, I labeled myself with those beliefs around this art. And so I kept it really private. But then finally one day, it was in July or June of 2019, and it was the middle of winter, it was raining, and out of nowhere, I definitely believe this was one of the first times I can recall something intervening, you know, spirit intervening, the universe intervening. I really do know this to be true. But I was, you know, in paralysis in bed. I was just, not okay. And out of nowhere, I slapped my laptop shut and I sat up in the mirror and I looked at myself and I said, the pull to share my art is greater than my fear of being seen.
Yeah, wow.
And those words like poured out of my throat. I'd never thought them before, had never phrased anything like that in that way before, but it shot out of my mouth. And so I got up, I had a shower, I got dressed, and I got in the car and I drove to the other side of the city. I performed in my first ever poetry slam and I won.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. And then from there, it just all happened.
I find that fascinating, that you've had that whole association with poetry being this old, outdated, boring thing. How do you, like, what do you love about poetry now? Where was the shift in that?
The realization, the deep remembrance, actually. It was a deep remembrance that this art form, when we write, what I love most about poetry now for myself personally, is the knowing that when I write something, it's a gift I'm giving myself now that will serve me later down the line.
Wow.
Whether it's tomorrow, whether it's a year from now, whether it's 5 years from now, I will look back at what I've written and it is a testament to my growth. It is a testament to my experience and to my life.
Yeah.
You know, I feel deeply grateful to have come to the awareness since my nonna passed away last Christmas. So a year ago yesterday.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, thank you. But I think it's potent and beautifully poetic. Classic. To really sit with the knowing that when I look back on my life, I want to know that I lived it.
Yeah.
When I look back on my life, I want to know that I've left something behind for people I love, people who love me, to see themselves within my experience and my experience within theirs. And poetry is the way that I get to do that. And everybody has a legacy. Everybody leaves something behind. And that's what I love the most about it, is that I feel that poetry for myself and for the people that get it is the way that we consolidate our humanity.
Yes.
And it's when you celebrate poetry in its rawness and its vulnerability and its truth, whatever pours out of you, you know, creativity, we are only the conduit to creativity. There is endless, it is abundant. You know, to be human is to be creative. We are all artists.
Yeah.
It's inevitable. And so to know that poetry for me now has been the avenue that the universe wanted me to discover all along. I feel deeply gifted by that. So yeah.
That's so beautiful. Wow. I honestly believe, like, with our purpose or our calling or our passions, it's almost like a rite of passage. This whole, I feel like a lot of people have this conditioning that's put on them of like, oh no, you can't do that because that's boring, or you can't do that because that's this, or you can't do that. And it's almost like, in order for us to reclaim our purpose and our passion and our mission in this life, we almost have to get through that level of cultural conditioning, which I feel like is very resonant in your story of like what you had to go through, the avoidance of it, and then finally understanding how it might actually like be valuable in your life and how it might actually give to you as well as the people around you, or as well that gift that it's given you. For us to feel the courage to try and be seen in it, to try and be heard in it. But I know being seen is a huge fear for a lot of people. So what would you say to someone who maybe wants to try poetry but is a bit hesitant?
Just go. Just show up. I was petrified, mortified of being seen for an incredibly long time, and it kept me small. And I didn't realize that my anxiety was, there's a duality to our anxiety. There's a duality to that fear. The fear is keeping you safe, yes.
Yeah.
But it's also keeping you in the past. And the past is younger than you. The past is older than you at the same time. Does that make sense? It's like, it's the past is the old you, but it's also the young you. Does that make sense?
The
it's
old
like,
you
the,
makes
like
sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like the old you, but it's younger you as well. Like every day that you move forward, you are getting, you are progressing and you are developing and you are getting older, but it's like past versions of you keep you in that narrative.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so when you don't show up for yourself, or you choose not to out of fear, you are living in the past. You are living in the old. You are living in the younger self. And I came to realize that the longer that I spent telling myself and subscribing to the belief that I wasn't good enough, I wasn't pretty enough, I wasn't skinny enough, I wasn't a good enough writer, I wasn't a good enough speaker, the longer I did that, the more of my life was wasted, the more of my life was spent in the past, in that narrative, in the wound. And the wound is there to serve us, absolutely. The wound is there to teach us, of course. But it takes action, and it takes gumption, and it takes bravery to heal it and to show up for it. And so for anyone that feels called to share their story, because poetry is only storytelling. It's not a limerick. It's not a haiku. It's not a sonnet. It's not a villanelle. It's not any of those things. I mean, it is, sure, but it's not. Poetry is not those things. It's not stylized. It is only truth. Everything is a poem. Everything is art. Everything is a story. And so if you feel called to share your story, but there's a fear of being seen, that's why you should do it. Because when you do it, you realize there's actually nothing to be scared about. The more you do it, the more you realize that the people that are in the room are the people who want to see you do it.
Yeah.
They're the only people that are there. The only people that rock up to these spaces are the people that value it. Aren't they the people that you want to be sharing that part of yourself with? The people who see it and value it? What I've learned over the years is that there are a lot of people that don't get poetry. They don't get it. And that's okay, because I didn't either. But of all of the people that have come, I have not yet met one person that's gone, I didn't like that. Maybe a couple, but they've come more than once, and they've come a few times. So I don't think it's actually that they don't like it. I think it's that people take time to discover what something has to serve them or has to offer them. And so show up, because, and also you don't even have to show up to perform the first time. You can just show up to receive and see others. Because that's what I did the first couple of times without even realizing, really. I'd gone to a couple of events and knew that they were open mics, but didn't register that I liked poetry. I didn't know that I liked poetry. And I'd gone to a couple of events because the event had enticed me. Like, one of them was this 200 birthday 200th birthday of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a celebration of science fiction because that work was one of the first works of science fiction and everything. And I went to this event and I was like, oh, wow, people are speaking on the stage. And the friend I was with, he said to me, you should get up there and you should read something. And I said to him, oh, me up there? No, I couldn't. I could never do that.
Mm.
Me? No way. And yeah, and now to think that I didn't even realize that the art was calling me then,
yeah,
because I was so closed off by this belief that no, it's not for me. It's just a thought. It's yeah. Thoughts, you know, thoughts become our beliefs. So for anybody who wants to try it, just own that what you believe is just a thought.
Yeah. Yep.
And just go and see. You don't have to show up any other way than just being there. And I guarantee you by the end of it, you'll go, oh, I could probably do that. Oh, I could have done that.
Yeah.
And then the more you go, the more you'll feel called to. And then one day it'll just happen. And then you'll go, that was one of the best things I've ever done in my life.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, it's the best.
I honestly feel like these beliefs we have is like a lot of our ego trying to protect ourselves. It's like this fear of, what if I'm seen? It's not actually being seen. It's like, what if I'm seen and then rejected? Or what if I'm seen and it doesn't go well, or people don't like what I have to say or share or something like that? And like you said, like in these spaces of poetry slams, of things like that, you're surrounded by poetry lovers. So even if you're just getting up there and giving it a go, it's like, how resonant is that truth of your belief that it's going to go terribly and everyone's going to laugh at me or whatever? Like, I don't know if the people would do that because they have such a reverence for poetry already that you getting up there. And I know every time I've gone to one of your events, I'm in such awe of everyone who gets on that stage, everyone who goes into the arena and goes, fuck it, I'm sharing my truth on this stage today because I believe in this poem. I believe in what I have to say and I want to get up there and give it a go. And yeah, it's just so beautiful to see the parts of people that they hide 90% of the time being shared and being witnessed. And I think when we are in our truth and when we are in our deeper version of ourselves, we have so much to give to this world that is so stifled by these beliefs around, we can't do that, that's too hard, that's too difficult. I'm in such awe of everyone who gets up on that stage. It's just such a courageous act, but I feel like it shouldn't be, because everyone should be able to get up on that stage and speak their truth in their poetry.
And that's the thing, is that they can. Yeah. And they do. And that's what I love about spoken word, is that it is the most inclusive art form. It doesn't discriminate against your literacy level, your language prowess, your disability, your race, your gender, your anything. Any label that this world wants to put on you, it doesn't discriminate. And the people that are there are the people that get that.
Yeah.
And I've learned more about the human condition and about where I fit in the world and where others fit from poetry than any classroom, than any book, than any degree that I've done. None of that learning has given me the kind of empathy and awareness and education and social awareness than poetry. Like, there's nothing compared to it.
Yeah.
And that's what keeps me coming back, is the constant learning and the constant unfurling of how others perceive the world.
Yeah.
And over the last few years, I've definitely softened and also become much more, I guess, aware of what my politics are, what I believe in, and where I stand on issues, because I've seen people's experiences.
Yeah.
And I really do believe in the medicine of spoken word. I've dedicated my whole life to it now. And I believe in it so deeply. And seeing the amount of people that get on stage and how many first timers that we get at WordCraft, and, you know, when people show up on the mic, it stuns me. And every month when I drive home and I have my silent time to reflect and recuperate, I just feel so honored to bear witness to people doing the thing for themselves. One of my favorite things in poetry is that moment where I notice a poet's voice catch in their throat, and I can feel it and I can sense it and I can see it in their throat. And then they breathe and the words come out, and suddenly Their body shakes don't matter. Their leg shakes don't matter. Nothing matters except this transmission of honesty, this transmission of story. And their voice just doesn't break. Mm. It's the most beautiful. It's just a really beautiful transcendent gift. And knowing that every person has the capacity and has the opportunity to have that experience,
mm.
that is an honor.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Mm. So tell me about WordCraft. How was WordCraft born?
How was WordCraft born? Well, I don't usually tell this part, but the part I usually tell is it was born in my parents' basement during COVID, which is hilarious. Like a classic like startup story, right?
Yeah.
You know, hustling away in my parents' basement during a pandemic. And that's definitely how it started. But what it really was born from was this realization that as a teacher, I didn't feel valued in the schools that I was working in.
Mm-hmm.
And if there was a handful of words that I would use to describe myself, one of them is definitely intense.
Yeah.
And I am a very big feeling, high energetic, emotional being.
Mm.
And I am incredibly opinionated and a lot of, you know, a lot of big personality traits that women aren't celebrated for.
Mm.
And that has really kept me small, or kept me on the back burner for a long time,
yeah,
in all of my jobs,
mm,
up until this point in my life, to be honest. And so I was working in a school that made a lot of promises to me and rolled me,
mm,
unfortunately. And yeah, it took me for a ride. And I just came to realize that I was never going to be able to teach the way I wanted to teach,
yeah,
in a school like that.
Yeah.
Led by people that didn't see me for who I really was,
mm,
for what I had to offer. Who is Ren as an individual woman?
Yeah.
Where is her vocation? Where is her passion? I didn't feel seen by any of my employers,
mm,
up until now. And I really believe that the rejection from them was the trigger for me to realize I have to do something on my own.
Yeah.
In order for me to show up the way I want to show up,
mm,
in order for me to be able to execute my sense of service and belief in what I have to offer, mm, as an educator, I had to do it on my own.
Yeah.
And I had to, because there wasn't anywhere I could go at that point in my career where I felt valued,
mm, mm,
which is heartbreaking as a teacher, because you'd think that in education, it's inevitable. Oh yeah, education, great. Let's value educators, but it's just not how the system is built.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's very rare to find a school that appreciates that you have interests outside,
mm, mm,
of school.
Yeah.
And I can honestly say that I'm in the best job I've ever had now, and with the best leadership and the best staff. It's just such a gift. But I don't believe I would have found it if I didn't have a moment where I had to crack and break,
mm,
and figure out how to build something on my own.
Yeah.
So I, interestingly, this woman, Ali Daniel, who runs her coaching business called Punch Drunk Soul from the US,
mm,
they were cold messaging people that they thought might be interested in a coaching course. And it arrived in my inbox the day that I realized that something had to change.
Wow.
I'd had a huge burst to my mom, just like, fuck this, like these people, they don't get me. Like,
mm,
oh, like how many times do I have to be rolled and disrespected,
yeah,
and discredited for my value,
mm,
when I have shown up time and time again for years,
yeah,
to realize that, you know, like what do I have to do?
Mm.
So I'd had this huge blowout with mom, and she was listening and going, yep, yep, you're absolutely right. Well, we're going to figure it out. You're going to have to figure it out and find a direction. And I said, I don't know what I'm doing.
Mm.
I wasn't yet fully qualified as a teacher at that point, but I'd been educating and in classrooms for 7 years.
Yeah.
And I'd done every other role except the classroom teacher role. But mm, I knew that I've known I'm a teacher since I was 17. I've, yeah, known for a very long time. And so the only thing that was missing from the proof that I was a teacher was a piece of paper saying that, mm, I was a teacher. Mm. And that was the thing that was holding me back from my belief in myself, was this very patriarchal capitalist idea of, mm, success, this piece of paper proof that you have gone through other people teaching you how to do something that you're already instinctively good at.
Yeah.
And it's in my soul codes, you know, it's in my Akashic reading. It's in everything. Every single time I show up in a space, I'm a teacher. And so I've always known it. And yet still in every circle of my life, I wasn't finding the space that I needed to be able to execute my teaching my way.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I ended up doing this course and I started WordCraft then. And it started off as a one-to-one coaching business. And then I realized that I didn't want to do that. Yeah. I wanted to do more programs and group work and events. I love hosting events. I love facilitating those spaces. I think that they're sexy and fun and juicy and celebratory. You know, they're fun, they're parties. There's more color in running events and running programs of that nature for me anyway. And then there is in one-to-one work. And I mean, everybody's got their niche, but the one-to-one isn't really the thing that drives me the most. And so I did that for a while and I had a handful of clients, and some of which are now some of my dearest friends, and two of them out of the first five are now still crew on the WordCraft crew. One of them moved away, another one I still see around. And yeah, it's been a beautiful journey. So it started off that way, and then I started the event online, and then it started growing and growing, and then I took some time off because I burnt out. Then I grew it again and again, and it just kept going. And yeah, now we're averaging 45 to 50 people a month.
Great.
At the Fitzroy Art Collective in Fitzroy off Brunswick Street. And yeah, we're running open mics and poetry slams, and I'm running a writing course that's just done its first two rounds this year called Right Now, where people can get the foundational skills when it comes to spoken word poetry, and also just re-emerging and reconnecting with their love for writing and really addressing the different stories that they subscribe to around their belief and their worthiness of being a writer. And yeah, it's just developed in a way that I never anticipated. And on the other side of it, I also have an agent with Booked Out, who are the booking agent that schools will call to bring authors and writers to their school for different events.
Yeah.
So they're my agent and they run WordCraft's bookings. And I go to schools and I run programs with them and with the council, and I do commissions for all different kinds of organizations, and I do performances, and I do all kinds of things with my art now. And I never anticipated that being a teacher and being a writer could merge in such a niche and interesting way to build a brand and build a business and build a corner in community that I get to mother my way, and that now I'm in a position where I finally clicked in and clued into the reality that, wow, everything that I've been chipping away at over the last few years is now all dropping into place and is showing up in a way that I did not anticipate. You can't anticipate it. So it's incredible to think that, you know, 3-4-ish years ago I started this thing and I kept showing up because I believe in it. And it's not hard because I believe in it. So I just kept going. But I didn't know that I had to do that or that I wanted to do that until I was really let down to the point that I was really like, do I want to be a teacher? Is this real? Am I meant for this? Is this the culture that I'm entering? Is this what I have to put up with for the rest of my life as an educator? The constant disappointment by people that say that they're there to support you? Is that really what I'm subscribing to? Or is this just the universe trying to say, wake up, lady, like there's something else? And over the years, I've come to realize that, yes, it's because there was something else and it's this.
I was actually going to ask you a question and go back there, but you brought it back anyway, which amazing. Is fantastic. Yeah, what I'm hearing is like you've always known within you you're a teacher, right? You've got that aspect of your personality that just shines and it's just who you are, right? So you've tried to fit yourself in the mold of teacher as we see it in today's day and age, but you found yourself there and you're like, I should be happy now, right? Like this is where I belong, but then you're finding brick walls and it's just not really going the way your heart desires it to go. And I'm like hearing like how we spoke about this morning, like you fit your, sometimes you try to fit yourself into a mold of how you should be or how society wants you to be or how the school wants you to be as a teacher. And sometimes it doesn't blend, or you feel like you're bigger than that, or you feel like there's more than that. And it just doesn't seem to come to fruition, those two aligning in the way you want it to feel. So if someone out there listening to this podcast right now is feeling like they have this passion, they have this calling, but it's just not really fitting into the box that they've, you know, decided their career should be or whatever it is, like, how do they break out of that? How do they move forward into the, into what their heart knows is true, but it just isn't really materializing in the spaces they're currently in?
Our whole life is a series of choices. So it's only a choice. And then once you make a choice, I heard this online recently, once you make a choice, then you decide, that's where the decision comes. You make a choice and then you decide, is this right or wrong?
Yeah.
Is this okay? Can I make this work or not? Mm. If not, you make another choice. Mm. The decision comes on the other side of choice. It's not a decision and then a choice.
Yeah.
It's all, everything is a choice. Every word we say, we speak is a choice. Mm. Every action we take is a choice. And then we decide if that's serving us or not.
Yeah.
Right. So if you're in a position where you feel that something is calling you that's bigger, mm. then take an action. Mm. Take a small but mighty action. Doesn't mean that you need to be seen. Doesn't mean you need to quit. Don't quit unless you feel safe to.
Yeah.
Does it mean that you, you buy a microphone and you create a YouTube channel and you just take a small action that feels big, that feels overwhelmingly, who is that person? Am I worthy of doing that? Can I be seen doing this? People are going to judge me. People are going to go, what the hell are they doing? Nobody cares about you as much as you do. Oh, what a relief.
Yeah.
Thank goddess. Oh, thank goddess nobody cares about me as much as I do. And coming to terms with that realization that no one cares about what you're doing as much as you do.
Yeah.
Oh, it gives you so much freedom. Mm. And while that might sound like, oh, well, then why do it?
Mm.
Well, that's the reason why you do it.
Yeah.
Because you only have yourself to serve.
Yeah.
When it comes to anything, what poetry has taught me is that I do this for myself first and always.
Mm.
And when we talk about writing, when we talk about film, when we talk about art, there's this adage where you create what you want to see in the world, right? You create what you want to see.
Yeah.
And the more you do it for yourself, the more you will magnetize the people that need it to.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if you try to serve others or you try to make choices for others, well, then you're not serving anybody because you don't know what people want.
Mm.
You don't know what people need. You have this idea, right? So when you're feeling stuck, part of the thing that might be holding you back is, well, what if it doesn't help others? What if it isn't? There isn't a market?
Yeah.
What if what I want to do isn't actually valid?
Mm.
Well, that's impossible. Mm. Because if you're doing it for yourself,
yeah.
Well, then there's purpose there.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it's impossible for something that you do, if you're doing it from a place of your truth and your need, it's impossible for it to be invalid because you need it.
Yeah.
And you are the most important person in your life.
It brings you joy at the end of the day.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it brings you a sense of purpose. It brings you that heart lift.
Mm.
If it makes you feel that way, then do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's like when you get to the end of your life and you look back on it, what you want to comfortably say when you're immobile in a chair or you're starting to lose your mind and you're aware that things are changing, you know, whichever way, if you're lucky enough, you know, touch wood for your life to end in those natural ways, right? If you're lucky enough to get to a point where you get to look back on your life, do you really want to look back on your life and go, oh, I didn't take the chance because I was scared of what other people might think? Who cares what they think? Because what I've learned is that a lot of the time, the people that think negatively or weirdly or judge you, they'll leave and they make space for the people that really value what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, after over the last 5 years, my friendship groups have shifted incredibly.
Mm.
I went from thinking that I had this incredibly tight group of friends to realizing that they actually weren't my people.
Mm.
They didn't see me. They didn't value me. Our values weren't really aligned. They made me feel guilty for my art. They made me feel guilty for my passion and my desire for them to see me in that space.
Yeah.
They made me feel guilty for that. I was gaslit by friends. You know, I was ignored. I was, you know, rejected. I've had really interesting, strange encounters with the people that I thought I loved who loved me.
Mm.
Simply because I was showing up in this big, brave way, doing something that drove me to, you know, elation every time I did it. And showing up in those big ways and being celebrated for it and being successful for it made people feel weird around me. And then I lost a lot of friends. Well, that's okay. Because now, you know, as I was sharing with you earlier, and I've been saying a lot recently, I'm looking around in my life and I'm going, I've got love everywhere.
Yeah.
Like I get to sit back, drink a cacao, have a glass of wine, you know, and enjoy the fact that I've let all of this shit go, all of these people go. You know, good riddance. Good luck to you. Live your life. Good on you. I have love for you, but it's over there now. You know, thank you so much. But now I look around and I know that there are so many people that I can call who will call me back.
Yes.
I have so many people who I will call and they will answer in the middle of the day.
Mm.
You know, I can think of five people off the top of my head. I know that I can call them and they will answer me in the middle of the day, no matter what they're doing.
Yeah.
But they're the people that I've been able to magnetize into my life because I've made a choice to show up for something that calls me to my purpose, that calls me to my core.
Yeah.
And I've taken the risk and just gone with the motion and trusted the process. And now I get to reap the reward of that.
Yeah.
And it hasn't been easy and I've sacrificed a lot and I've hurt myself a lot and there's no nobility in the hustle. There isn't. There's no nobility in burnout. It's a capitalist a byproduct and it's yucky and gross and we want to cancel that shit. That can be canceled. Everything else can stay, right? But I really do believe that if you are feeling called to do something and you feel stuck in your career, there's a way out.
Yeah.
You can make money doing anything these days.
Mm.
And the first thing that my dad said to me when I was nominated for anything, he said, why do you want to do poetry? It's so sad. And then he started to see the potential that it had on community, on my bank account, on my sense of self-worth, on my career. And now whenever something happens, I call him and all he says is, good kid, keep going.
Yeah.
And it's the knowing that because I stuck to it, and it's changed his opinion. And that's just, it's huge growth.
Yeah.
You know, and for everybody. So don't be held back by your fear of other people's opinions, because as long as you continue to show up for yourself, the people who love you will follow.
Yeah.
And you will teach them too.
I think it's so easy when we come up against that person saying something that, oh, you shouldn't do that, or you shouldn't pull your eye, you should whatever, to think, am I doing something wrong?
Mm.
But I think really the mindset shift that's so necessary here is, are these my people?
Absolutely.
And unfortunately, it takes some time in the shit of like, okay, people are dropping away. They're pulling away because I'm in my success or I'm in my purpose or I'm just loving my life doing this poetry stuff that might seem really weird to other people. It takes time sitting in that before the new people magnetize.
Yes, it does.
And that is the hardest part, I think, of because we can quite easily get in our head and be like, have I done the wrong thing? Should I make myself small and put myself back in that box so the right people stay with me? But no, it's about expanding and expansion and making sure that we're pleasing ourselves. Because when we put ourselves back in that box, we've abandoned ourselves and what we want, our joy, for the sake of other people's to like us, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But they don't like you. They don't like you for that, right? They don't actually like you then, right? When we sacrifice ourselves and we put ourselves back into that box. The box keeps us safe, but it keeps us small, right? You know, we've said it before. And people don't actually like that. They think they do. But the reality is that when you realize they like an idea of you.
Yeah.
Because if you're in a box, that's just an idea of you, right? It's not actually who you are.
Or a past self.
Yeah. It's not actually who you are. So going back into the box, it's actually not helping anybody. It's not. Because then later down the line, when you need someone and you turn to those people thinking, but I've done so much for you, you know, or even subconsciously being aware, I've done so much for you. I've done this for you. I've done that for you. I've shown up in this way because that's how you wanted me to.
Yeah.
And now I need you and you're not there for me. It hurts more.
100% builds resentment. It's like, I've put myself in this box. I've done everything you wanted me to do. And now you're still not giving me the love that I was looking for originally. Yeah, of course you're like, fuck, I've done all this stuff. And it's going to build resentment. It's going to build discontent in that relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like as well, that magnetizes the rejection. Because when you realize that you have given yourself away to the validation or the idea of someone else's validation, then when they don't give you what you have subconsciously or actively been seeking from them, then it's even worse.
Yeah.
Now, on the other hand, and the rejection dysphoria just, oh, wow, yuck, right? And I know personally, very recently, how that just makes you spiral.
Mm.
And you go, where am I going?
Yeah.
Why? It's so dark down here. Why am I in here? Mm. This sucks. Like, I look so much hotter up there. Why am I down here?
Yeah.
You know, how did I get down here? How did I, you know, even though I'm so aware of what I'm doing, how can I not snap out of that? And that's part of the beauty of, like, you know, we train our mind to be stronger than our emotions, right? And that's part of the journey. But when you start to show up authentically, in the sense of, this is what makes me feel good.
Mm.
When I do this, I feel hot as. When I do this, I feel seen and sexy and alive and worthy for myself.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, then when people let you down, you actually don't get let down that much because you don't need them.
You've got your own back.
You've got your own back. Yeah. And that is such a flex.
Yeah.
That is such a wonderful feeling because you really do start to have the experience of water off a duck's back. It's really quite an incredible shift. And I definitely have felt it this year. You know, I've had a few relationships with different people that have sort of disintegrated in ways that have been really quite confronting.
Mm.
But I really do know, it's not that I believe, I know this to be true, is that poetry as my conduit to healing and my avenue for self-expression and awareness and coalescence is what I've learned in those words on the page is how to show up in relationships to advocate for myself.
Mm.
And so this year I've had multiple instances where I've been able to advocate and communicate from a place that I've learned how to because of my art.
Yes. Wow.
So the more that I've written, and the more that I've performed and the more that I've been celebrated in my work, whether it's competitively or just locally, those experiences have all consolidated this knowing that I know what I'm worth.
Mm.
I know what my boundaries and my ideas of respect are.
Yeah.
I'm open to communicating them. And if you don't want to meet them and meet me halfway and communicate your side and meet me there, well, then that's okay.
Yeah.
I don't need you.
Mm.
Thank you so much. See you later.
Mm.
And I've had multiple instances this year where I've had to execute those skills in different contexts in different ways and really speak to my wounds and show up in ways that I never would have felt safe to or known how to if it wasn't for poetry.
Yeah.
And by witnessing other people as well, poetry has given me the license to know, hey, I know that people feel this way when they're in this kind of situation because I've seen them speak to that feeling.
Yeah.
So I feel safer to express this concern or this feeling to this person because I know that there's a very high chance that they're going to be feeling one of these certain kinds of ways. So let's open up the portal to have that conversation and see what happens.
Yeah.
Some people have been able to meet me there and other people haven't.
Yeah.
And that's okay. It's not a reflection of me.
Mm.
It's a reflection of them and where they're at. And poetry has given me the license, or rather, I've given myself my license through my poetry to be able to honor that wherever I go now, I feel skilled enough and worthy enough to communicate from a place that feels safe and proud and progressive for me rather than going back into the box and going, I'm just going to act from this place because this is what I know.
Yeah.
So I think when it comes to taking action and taking choices, the more you take those choices, the more that you show up as the version of yourself you want to see, just in small bites.
Mm.
One day it all clicks in and you go, what the fudge? Are you serious? I did that? Me? God, amazing. So,
I've never made that connection before between poetry and being able to communicate and express feelings to people who are really close to you. And, you know, the ability to get on stage and share your truth and share, you know, this is how I'm authentically feeling right now. I'm not blaming you. I'm not judging you, but this is where I'm at. And let's have a conversation about that. It's like flexing a muscle, getting on stage and saying those words and putting that out there to go, all right, now that I've done that, I can do that with someone else and see if they'll meet me at that place of, let's have a conversation about this, even if it's an uncomfortable one. Let's see where we're at. Like it's totally on them whether they can meet you in that place or whether their wounding comes up or something like that. And that's okay as well. We don't judge. But yeah, it's really interesting that that's flexing the muscle of being seen, being witnessed, being heard in your truth, and then being able to do it in those really close connections where, you know, it's a lot more scary because you might say, you upset me when you did this, and they might not respond well to that. But yeah, the ability to actually share what's going on for you is going to take you tenfold in your ability to relate to people and actually have connections and intimacy that's deeper than I have to sit in this box and be a certain way and wear this mask. Otherwise you won't like me and you won't keep inviting me over or be my friend or whatever it is.
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like when I think about the biggest growth that I've experienced this year, it's definitely been in my relationships, definitely been in my relationships and being able to create a container with my loved ones that honors where they're at. And I've had a lot of shadows, a lot of shadows unstitched this year. A lot of mirrors, showing some parts of myself that I'm not, that I haven't been very proud of. And I believe that, yeah, this art has gifted me the skills to articulate them and be compassionate towards those parts of myself. And I think about the healing that I've experienced with particular people in my life. And it's all because of how the conversation has sort of bubbled out of me. And I've had to create that space to have that conversation, because if it doesn't come out in a conversation, it'll come out in a poem. And I'm getting to the point now in my art where I recognize this compulsion that I have as a poet to word vomit and get something out of me is actually the compulsion to speak up. It's the compulsion to express and to heal and to move forward and to continue to break cycles and keep moving and keep going. And so what I've been able to recognize this year is that when that calling comes up in my throat, I get to choose, is this a conversation or is this a poem or is it both? Because for so long it was just poetry. It was only poetry. It was, that was my conduit to expression and to healing. That was my therapy. But now that I feel safe in my words, now that I feel confident in my self-expression and what I have to give others and what I have to give myself, now I feel so much safer to choose when my feelings are calling me to converse. And trusting that the people in my life that I want to have those conversations with, because they have seen me in this way in my art, they will honor how I am in the conversation with them too. And they will see the patience and the care and the tenderness and the vulnerability that comes from my voice, that comes out of, that is compelled to be shared from my throat. And they know that I am being mindful and thoughtful in the way that I'm choosing to articulate this with them because they have seen me in my art. And so when I think back to hating poetry, to think that that kind of learning, where the people in my life value the time I take to have hard conversations with them because they believe that how I speak is coming from a place of love, because they see me in an art form that has changed my life simply because it was on the other side of an opinion, that has got to be one of the biggest gifts of my life. To know that that's how the people in my life see me now. That's how I know that that's where I love from. And I've learned how to do that because I changed my opinion about something I thought I hated. What do you mean? Sure, I've created a career and I've won things and I've done things and, you know, I get hired for all kinds of cool stuff now. It's the best thing ever. Like, yes, writer dreams come true. F yeah. But all of that stuff can stay on the side, knowing that the people that I love who love me see me for my real self and trust that they can speak their truth with me and that I will take the time to hear them. And know that they will have the time, take the time to hear me. That is a gift that I didn't anticipate poetry would give me.
That's
And that's one of the reasons I love it so much, is because when we realize that the answer to our problems is probably hiding in plain sight. It's probably on the other side of an opinion.
Yeah.
Yep. And when you realize that the answer to your problem might be on the other side of an opinion, there's only laughter there, because it's like, what? What do you mean?
Yeah.
I just have to change an opinion and then I could change my life. Yeah, bitch. It's that simple.
Yeah.
So, that's poetry for me.
It's that simple, but something people really struggle to do is see past their own perception or their own way of looking at things. Mm. And I would just love to ask, like, when you feel something coming up that you need to speak up about, or that you feel needs to maybe go into a poem, how do you know that feeling is within you? How do you feel that?
If it keeps eating at you.
Yeah.
If it's a thought that keeps eating you and percolating on the back of your throat, you keep trying to find time to bring it up with friends. You really want to message someone, but you resist it. You keep watching things or listening to songs that remind you of the issue. You feel yourself trapped in that very adolescent angst, whether it's a relational or personal. If it's something that just keeps eating at you, that's how you know that that's something that needs to be processed. That's how you know that it's something that needs to be written. And the writing doesn't need to be poetic. It doesn't need to be fancy or, riddled with metaphor. And it doesn't need to be. It simply needs to be the words that you would use to describe it to someone you love. That's all.
Yeah.
And whatever those words are, whatever you have access to, is exactly how it's supposed to come. And then from there, you can develop your craft and you can develop different strategies to explore and go deeper into understanding your experience more. But that's all the fun stuff. The work is the compulsion. That's where I think the work is, because that's where you have to see yourself. And when you have to meet yourself in your truth and you haven't done it before, it's really confronting. And especially when we're in private, I think. On stage, it's another thing. I think by the time you get to the stage, I believe that it's diving. And when you dive, and it's always a beautiful dive, and when you dive, there's that moment of impact where it's just this rush of cold. And then you feel so alive.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what getting on stage for the first time is. And it's the best. The work is in private.
Yeah.
When you have to go, okay, this is hurting me. This is taking up too much of my life. It's got to be dealt with. You feel it. It's instinctive. If it's a thought that keeps interrupting your day, and you just keep wanting to drop that person's name into conversation or that topic into conversation, or you're finding it everywhere, that's when you know.
Yeah.
And you just have to put the pen to paper and ask yourself, what do I really want to say? What am I feeling? What do I really want to say? And then you start speaking to that person, or you start speaking to the mirror, or you start speaking to that concept or that issue the same way that you would if they were right in front of you and there was no fear of being rejected.
Yes.
Ooh, yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Mm. So, yeah, that's how you know.
Definitely. Thank you. Is there anything else you'd love to share with the listeners today?
Do it for yourself first and always. There will come a time where, especially if you have started writing for a while and you've been on stage a few times and you're like, oh, this is hot as, I want to keep doing this. There will come a moment where you start to write for the crowd. And that's okay. Don't judge it, but thank it and show it the door. Let it sit beside you. Don't let it impact where you're at. Always write for yourself first and always.
Yeah.
Because when you write from that place, that's where the magic is. That's where the wordcraft is. Yeah. That's where it is.
Yeah.
When you write for others, you don't serve anybody. And it won't feel the same.
Yeah.
It won't be the same kind of dive. It won't be the same kind of ignition. It won't serve you. So always write for yourself first and always.
Yeah.
And trust the process.
I think that's huge. There's so many people like influencers, people out there who are doing their art or their craft or whatever for people.
Mm.
And yeah, forgetting that it is ultimately for us and our joy as well. And just being like, oh, I think there's a lot of wounds in like receiving accolades and like wanting the attention and things like that. And I think that can be a real block for some people in getting their art out there as well, because yeah, it's like, oh, well, I'm only going to do this if it goes well, or if it gets received in the way I would like it to be received. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, what's the point? And I think that's a really tough space to be in.
Yeah, it's super challenging.
Mm.
And it's hard because especially when you start to be validated through winning, you start to show up in a way that makes you think, well, if I don't show up as the best, then I'm the worst again.
Yeah.
And then that means that my work isn't worthy.
Mm.
But once you win something, no one can take that from you.
Yeah.
Once you win it, no one can take it from you. And once you show up, no one can take that from you.
Mm.
So I think that success is all subjective.
Yeah.
And I know that's very rich coming from someone that has achieved a lot in a short amount of time. But I also do believe it. And I think because I've had a lot of material success, and it's taken me a long time to feel safe to even say that aloud.
Yeah.
Because after I won the championship, I didn't tell people that I won the championship in public. I didn't feel safe saying that on stage for a year and a half. People would say it and read it in my bio when it was there, and I wouldn't really put many things in my bio for a long time.
Why was that?
Because I felt shame about being successful. I felt like that meant that I would look arrogant or up myself or think too highly of myself or put myself on a pedestal. People put you on a pedestal anyway. I can't help that.
Yeah.
And I'm past silencing myself or diminishing myself, minimizing my capacity and my power because other people feel triggered by it. I'm not sorry for that.
No.
You know, I'm not sorry for being big and for being successful. I'm not sorry for that anymore.
No.
And, you know, recently I had a friend who was worried about competing in this slam that we hosted the other Friday because she was nervous that because she'd won another thing that she, if she didn't, that, you know, that meant that she was less than.
Mm.
And it made me realize that this feeling that we have, this fear, this internalized capitalist perfectionism, I must be the best all the time. Yeah. It is so debilitating.
Mm.
And this poet is an incredible poet, just an incredible writer, incredible voice, incredible presence, so diversely skilled and magnetic. And still that kind of artist feels this way.
Yeah.
We don't deserve this.
No.
And so as long as we show up for ourselves first and always, and we write from a place of our truth, and we remember that everything that we feel is felt by somebody else. But the more that we show up against that, that's resistance. That's radical.
Yeah.
That's a revolution.
Mm.
And poetry is a vehicle to that. So the cycle continues.
I think it's so easy to feel when we've got these big emotions, like I'm the only one who's probably feeling this, or I'm so alone in this.
Mm.
And it's not until we do share it
and
we write a poem and we share it with people that they can reflect, wow, I've been there. I've felt that. And not only can what you've been through become someone else's healing as well as your own, we feel more connected with, like, we're not alone in this, you know. Exactly. This is the human experience. Like, shit is going to happen and we're going to respond, and we're allowed to feel this way when we've been shut down for that for so many years. Or cultural conditioning doesn't allow us to feel things or express our truth. And I think that's just such a beautiful gift that you give to people at your events.
Thank you. It takes a village.
Yeah,
it takes a village. And I feel deeply grateful that Wordcraft is only one event of the Melbourne spoken word community. There's Slamma Lamma Ding Dong, there's Mother Tongue, there's Radio Laria, there's Radio Talk, there's all of these beautiful events in the city. And Wordcraft is one of the youngest ones. And I feel deeply grateful that our collective is in a position now where people come every month. And when I stand outside and I watch people walk in, I'm hugging everybody that comes into the space. And whenever I touch base with people that haven't been to that event, they thank us for how safe it feels.
Yeah.
They thank us for, wow, there are so many different kinds of people here. Wow, I feel so welcome. Of course, welcome to Wordcraft. Welcome. And I know that I know that this is only the beginning of what we have to offer, and our community has finally clicked into this very like toddler phase in the sense that everyone's just started to get to know each other, but there are so many new friendships and so many gifts and so much connection. And I believe that it's simply because of the art form.
Yeah.
And sure, you know, it's the Italian in me too, the host. But it's also that it's because I believe that there's something here. I believe that this art form has a lot to offer. I believe in it.
Mm.
But because I believe in it, WordCraft has magnetized people who believe in it too.
Yeah.
And so now that because I gave myself permission to show up in this way and I tried and I let go of a lot of people, I sacrificed a lot of my time, gave a lot of money into this project, a lot of money into me learning. Now, and I'm not talking about money because it's money. I'm talking about money because it's energy, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, now that I've been able to do all of that and commit to this project, now I look around and we have a village.
Yeah.
And the village has been there for a while, but my imposter syndrome didn't allow me to see it because it made me feel like I had to do it, that I was doing it on my own, and that I could only do it on my own because I wasn't worthy of receiving that kind of love and that kind of support.
Yes.
And now finally that I've clicked, I've tuned in and I've turned on and I've gone, wait a minute. There are people in my crew that have been a part of this project since the beginning.
Yeah.
That were the first people to hire me, that were the first people to put money into that account and to give that energetic exchange to trust that I was building something that was of service.
Yeah.
I've had some really difficult conversations with some of these people to make sure that WordCraft maintains its integrity, its inclusivity, its purpose. And these people have helped me stay on track.
Yeah.
And if that isn't a village, then I don't know what is.
Definitely.
Yeah. So I'm deeply grateful for what I've built, but it's not just me anymore. And that is, gives me shivers thinking about this is only the beginning, you know. Yeah. I'm only 30.
Yeah.
You know, I see myself doing this until I'm old and gray. And so to know that, yeah, we're at the very beginning is just, so colorful.
Yeah. So exciting to see. I can't wait to see where you go from here.
Yeah. Thanks. It's going to be great. Yeah.
Thank you so much for all your beautiful wisdom you've shared with us today. It's been incredible.
Thank you.
And I cannot wait to get this out there.
Oh, thank you for having me.
No worries. Yeah,
such a gift.
And thank you to all the listeners today. I hope you really resonated with some of that and got a lot out of that. And where can we find you, Ren, if we want to come to your events or if we want to see spoken word poetry or if we want to perform poetry?
Amazing. So, yeah, you can check out WordCraft Ren. So Ren spelt like the bird with a W. I love W's on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a website, wordcraftspokenword.com.au. And it's a little bit out of date, but whatever. Follow me on Instagram first. And, yeah, come along. All of the events are on Humanitix because it's Australian-owned and they give money to charity. And, yeah, you can find us. Our next event is Jan 16, I'm pretty sure. Should probably check that date. But, yeah, normally our events are the third Friday of every month at the Fitzroy Art Collective on Cecil Street in Brunswick. And, yeah, we can't wait to see what happens in 2024.
Amazing. Look forward to seeing you there.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you.